Okay. So I will be looking your way, by the way, for time guidance, because I started with 45 slides when I arrived this morning, and I assumed that there'd be a lot of repetition, so I've cut it down to 26. No idea if that's 15 minutes. It could be an hour, who knows? So it could be a bit rambly. But I'm Mark, I do Figshare. Is this mic okay? Yeah? Figshare is, for those who don't know, I'm going to give a quick intro and then get into the idea of beyond the traditional article and what that means. So Figshare is a platform that I set up when I was a researcher, and I had this idea that I had all these videos and I had all these data sets and I couldn't really put them anywhere, and that was the majority of the research that I published, the research that I generated. And I know now that I generated 9 gigabytes of data during my PhD, of which I've got 3 papers out, they've got 5 static images in them each, so that's not 9 gigabytes of data. So what happens to all the rest of it? It gets thrown in the file drawer, never seen again. So I wanted to find somewhere where I could upload my research and make it citable, shareable, and discoverable. And so this is what Figshare does. It's a cloud-based research data management system. So you upload your stuff. It's kept private, so you get some private space, kind of like Dropbox, and then you add some metadata, and you can make it publicly available in a few seconds, really. Everything gets citable, made citable with a DOI. So those 3 things that I said I was looking for, discoverability, citability, and shareability. So you can share things. It's got social media buttons on there. Lots of people share their stuff via Twitter. It's citable, as I say. Everything gets a DOI from the data site. So the one thing that we were saying we were, but for the last year we've not been able to quantify, is this idea that we're discoverable. We do a lot of work on SEO. Every object has its own, the title of the page is the title of the object, so we're trying to make your research more discoverable, or academics' research more discoverable in this manner. So the quantifiable aspect of that is DataCite, who we get our DOIs from. They started tracking the most resolved DOIs across their whole system, so they provide DOIs for universities, for publishers, for Figshare. And in January we had 8 of the top 10, in February we had 7, March isn't out yet. And so this all comes down to, we're showing that people are uploading their research, making it publicly available, and it's getting discovered. I mean, as we just heard, people finding slides the other day. And why is this? Because I had, when I set this up, my own colleagues said, this will never work, I'm never going to share my research, what's in it for me, kind of thing. So the idea that kind of 200,000 files were made publicly available by people in the last year, it's kind of, I know this is a texty slide, no one likes texty slides, but just to cut it down, this is kind of where I argue. I would disagree with what Mark Walpole said this morning about the idea that it needs to be a grassroots thing coming up. Because as I say, my old colleague said, that's rubbish, I'll never use this. And so it needs to be coming from both areas, really. So you've got this grassroots thing, which is why people start sharing their research on Figshare. There's a few basic points there. You know, it's simple to use. It has to be as simple to use as YouTube or Flickr, otherwise, or Facebook. If Facebook had a webinar to show you how to use it, I'd never use Facebook. So it has to be super intuitive. Visualization is cool. I like the idea that you can visualize stuff in the browser in the format that I produced it. So if I have a WMV video, I can just upload it, it'll play. I don't have to convert it to different things. And there's also this kind of thing here, which I'll show you in a little bit, which is the ego of scientists or academics. You know, they all have to be fighting in competition against everybody else, because there's not enough jobs at the top. So how are you going to get that job at the top? You've got to kind of boast about your research in some way. And that's something that we've really catered to. And that's why people have been making their stuff available. But as I said, I disagree with Mark Walpole. And that for me, this is the stuff that's really changed things. I mean, we have, you know, a lot of files that were made available last year. But there's a whole load of data that's, you know, just hidden away in file drawers and no one will ever make them available. Because there's so many people who won't do anything until they're told to by funders. Until they're mandated to do it, I won't jump through your hoops. As soon as you tell me to do it, I'll jump through every hoop you give me, because that's how I get money and that's how I progress. So this is where the innovation is coming from right now. We've been here, we've heard about PeerJ, we've heard about all different areas of innovation in academia or academic publishing that are coming along. And so we're talking about being beyond the traditional article. And so this is kind of, this might be a bit out of date, but this is almost where I see us. You know, you've come from the traditional press, you know, and we created Word documents and, you know, not Word documents, but, you know. Might as well have done. We created text documents, and we've gone all the way to over here, and we have text documents on an iPad. So, well, great improvement. So if we're talking about this, you know, this innovation in this space, there's kind of two aspects of what you need to be thinking about. How we're moving forward with that text document and what we're doing in other areas. And so where are these other areas coming about from? And there's loads of factors that are causing this innovation to happen and these new business models to emerge. So the first obvious one of them is the open access conversation that we've had linked in today. This is some research from Cameron, who's here. I'll come back to this image later, by the way. But so there's open access, that's a big aspect. People have been talking about the cost of article processing charges. This is a plot by Ross Mounts. Rossmounts.co.uk is where you can find it, because he's not citable yet. But it shows you the different levels of open going upwards and the different prices. And so you're kind of in this space now that you're thinking, well, there's so much choice. Where am I going to publish and why am I going to publish in that journal? And one of we can't get away from the biggest factor in that at the moment is still impact factor. PLOS, who disown the impact factor, still have a growth curve that goes like this, and then when they got their first impact factor, it goes like this. So you can ignore it all you want, but it's still pretty relevant. And then what else is going on in this kind of big disruptive space? Is this from the NSF? So the idea that products of research are not just publications, the problem that I had, you know, I generated all this data, but none of which actually made it into my end articles. And so this is, the NSF have now made a change in January that says that they're going to be measuring academics based on products and not publications. So if you have a video that gets cited a million times, that's probably your most impactful research, and you can be judged on that. Just looking at, you know, if it's not just your publications that are the important thing, so it's the research data behind the publications, that's still a problem, because there was this great set of articles that came out in Nature last week or the week before that showed a lot of different things about the future of scholarly publication. And one of the things was this, yeah, make your data available, that's the future. But 67%, you probably can't read that, of people surveyed said that they're not being able to access the research data was an actual problem for them in doing their research. So it's all great saying we should be doing this, but no one's actually really addressing this, which is strange, because the funders seem to be saying you should be doing this. NSF saying are expected to share with other researchers at no more incremental cost the primary data. So NSF, biggest funder in America. If it's not NSF, then it's NIH, who say the same thing. Just to show it's not just the life sciences in this kind of area, this is also in the States, the humanities are saying we should be making the data available. In the UK, this is from the DCC website, which shows, it just shows basically all of the green boxes being filled up are how close we are to mandating that all of this research data should be available. So all of the research councils in the UK are kind of getting to this point. And just to have an almost global feel to it, we also have this quote from Neelie Kroes in the EU. And so she's saying that this should be done across the whole of the EU. So it's a global problem. So publishers need to be thinking about this. And it's not just this that's causing innovation. There's also lots of other things. So people don't trust the impact factor. You've got altmetrics come along. There's altmetric.com and impact story at the bottom here, which are tracking the impact of this research, of these DOIs around the internet. And they're looking at different forms of research outputs, code, videos, different things like this, Stack Exchange comments, all kinds of crazy stuff that researchers want to get credit for. So if we come back to this and we say, okay, so you have the old way and where we might be at the moment, one thing that publishers aren't really doing is treating them as two separate beasts. The PDF is important, it's not going away. It is still what most people click on an article when they get to it online, because they want to download it, and you'll hear about Utopia Docs in a minute that does some cool stuff on that side of things. But if we are moving online, then surely we should be treating them as two separate beasts. The online version should be the best way to visualize that content, on the internet or in a browser. The PDF should be that little thing that you take away and you can carry around with you. And so this innovation is coming by breaking up the little bits of publishing into separate things. This is Jason Priem decoupling the scholarly journal. And basically he's saying that you can pull apart all the different bits of publishing, and then what do you have as publishers? You're just offering a range of services. Well, it's exactly that. Publishers add value by offering these different services, and they might be the people who bring them all together. I, for one, don't think this will happen. I don't think we'll ever get past the idea that you can outsource a peer review. I think that's the fundamental thing that the publisher will have for the next 20 years. Maybe in the future they'll be the best filters of content because there's so much coming, but peer review is where it's not going away. But what's interesting with this is that there's a shift. Who's in control of the money now? It's the authors, because the author has the APC and they decide to choose where are we going to make this research available. So if you're looking at PeerJ being $99 and PLOS being $1,350, where are you going to publish? At the moment, you'd probably say, as a normal academic, PLOS one, because it's got an impact factor. In 3 years, PeerJ might have an equal impact factor. So what can you offer the researchers? So I'm going to show you a couple of things of what we've been working with publishers to do to show how they can work with, so how they can offer better services to their authors so that they will be the ones who the authors choose to pay that APC to. The first one here is, it's an article in Factor for 1000 Research. Rebecca Lawrence is here from Factor for 1000 Research. She's talking tomorrow should you want to talk to her. But what's great about this article, and it's probably my favorite article in the world, is that when you get to the, I don't really know what it's about, but when you get to the actual figure, you can click the figure and you're like, oh, that's a great graph. Yeah, full size, great. But then you can see the raw data behind the image. So you can get that raw data and actually dig into whether that is transparent. You know, you can reproduce that data, you can add to that data. The other thing we've done with PLOS here is this is what PLOS's SUP info used to look like. Great, loads of text links, and you know, there's videos. I'm going to expect it to download the video and hope that you've got the codecs to play it. So now with Figshare widgets, you can just flick through them all. There's 17 files here. And we have this nice overlay so you can, if it is a video, you don't have to download it, you just keep play, it plays in the browser. So that's just a couple of examples. Normal people on Figshare can do this. I mentioned Cameron's research before, I don't know if he's still here, but here's that figure that I just showed you that was in my talk, and here's the raw data behind that file. So he can probably tell you why he's done that, because he's very open and towards these kind of things, but there is ways in which the publication model is changing, and I was just trying to highlight a few here. You may say, I'm just about done, so I think I've timed this all right. You may say that, you know, scholarly publication has always been a bit behind the times in these kind of things, and I'm finding quite the opposite. As an academic, that's what I thought, but they're very forward-thinking. You see this Google Trends about big data, and you're thinking, well, it's just buzz. Is it actual traction? And then you look at the amount of data journals that have come out in the last, you know, I did a quick search on this. So there's all this data that's going to be made available to deal with these new mandates that people are forcing on top of researchers, which is a good thing. And what I would ask everybody who works as a publisher or who's working with this data to do is open everything up with an open API. Figshare has an open API, so anyone can come along and grab any of that data and say, give me all the spreadsheet data on microarrays with these tags in the last 6 months and crunch it all up, and you really build on top of all the research that's gone before as opposed to just trying to interpret it. So hopefully that was 15 minutes. I'm happy to answer any questions at the end. And before Steve stands up, I swear to God we haven't coordinated this dress over there. Thank you.